Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves and carefully planned humor. I'm Evan Schwartzschreiber, your host. On today's show, 5G and the next generation of wireless broadband. Today, the Senate Commerce Committee approved the Mobile Now Act. Will this legislation pave the way for the future of wireless? Will this legislation help free up the spectrum needed to meet the growing demand for mobile broadband? Joining me to discuss this is Tom Struble, Policy Counsel at Tech Freedom. Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Evan. Happy to be here.
And also joining me is someone who's somewhere on the spectrum, Baron Soka, President of Tech Freedom. Baron?
I'm here with lots of carefully scripted humor.
Well, that's great. Our listeners can look forward to that. So, gentlemen, demand for mobile broadband is growing exponentially as more people around the world access the internet through smartphones and tablets on mobile networks rather than or in addition to the traditional way of accessing the internet through wireline and pipes. And as a Cisco study recently showed, global mobile data traffic grew 4,000-fold over the past 10 years. It grew 74% in 2015 alone, and it's slated to grow 8-fold by 2020. So clearly the demand is exploding, and it really remains to be seen if governments are doing what's necessary to meet that demand. So today we've got the Commerce Committee in the Senate approving the Mobile Now Act, and this is really an effort to deal with some of the problems facing broadband deployment. So Tom, what is the issue with spectrum? Why is there not enough spectrum to meet the growing demand today?
Well, you may have heard the shortage of spectrum referred to as a crunch. The spectrum crunch is what they often say. And it is a real thing, particularly in urban areas, like here in Washington, D.C., along the coasts and most major cities. There's a shortage of spectrum. The existing four nationwide carriers, along with the regional carriers, are running out of spectrum to accommodate the growing use, particularly driven by video. More consumers are streaming video on their mobile devices than ever before, and that's putting a lot of strain on the network because video is so data intensive. So to accommodate that growing demand, we need more spectrum.
So government agencies are sitting on a lot of spectrum. And what does this bill do to incentivize those agencies to give up spectrum that maybe they don't need, but maybe they just don't want to give up?
Well, it's true that federal agencies do have a lot of spectrum. In particular, the Department of Defense and the Department of Transportation are sitting on vast swaths of spectrum that they do not use very much and could arguably be better used in private hands. People have been aware of this for a while. The 2012 PCAST report in particular pointed this out as a major way to solve the spectrum crunch. That is, getting spectrum from the hands of federal regulatory agencies into private companies' hands. So that's basically, everyone agrees that's what needs to happen, but the agencies that are sitting on this spectrum and using it for various things don't want to give up these assets for free. If they're going to give up this spectrum to private companies, they want a share of, say, the auction revenues that that spectrum would generate.
So is this bill going to basically pay these agencies to give it up?
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like we're quite at that point yet. There was some stronger language in the Mobile Now Act initially that was going to require a GAO study and require the agencies to issue in their budgets annually an opportunity cost, basically how much value that spectrum is generating in their hands and how much it would generate in private hands. Those were pushed out of the bill under some pressure, because people feel that maybe that isn't exactly the best way to get this spectrum from federal hands into private hands. So as of now, there's only a GAO study required by the bill to assess how much value this spectrum currently is generating and how much it would generate in private hands.
Yeah, it's worth noting here that there are a number of different ways you could try to get that spectrum out of the hands of federal agencies. There are carrots, there are sticks. There's simply making it more transparent, which is, I think, what Tom was just describing. I would just say we probably need all of the above, and it's something that really is going to need to be addressed by Congress, if not in this bill, then very soon, because it really is the only source to go to. It would be as if you had, imagine another industry where all the major inputs are owned by the government. It's not enough to have private companies there. They have to be able to get access to the major input to produce the good that consumers want, which in this case is better service.
Right, and Spectrum really is the lifeblood of the wireless economy. Our devices, our gadgets, they cannot get internet access or mobile broadband without it, and clearly government agencies sitting on a bunch of Spectrum is not ideal if that Spectrum could be better used by private entities. So there are other problems facing broadband deployment, though, specifically mobile broadband deployment, like siting. Tom, what is going on with siting? Is it that there's so much land that is owned by the federal government and companies just cannot get the permits they need to build wireless towers?
Well, that is the problem in at least a lot of areas of the country. The federal government holds, I think, 30% of U.S. land, particularly out west, west of the Rockies. A lot of the land out there is federally owned. So if you're going to cover those areas, then you are, of course, going to have to deploy a cell tower somewhere. And if most of the land around is federal, you may have to deploy it on federal land. And currently, it takes about twice as long to get a siting application approved if it's on federal land as compared to on private land. And that's a big problem that the Mobile Now Act is trying to solve.
And we've seen this problem of the federal government owning a lot of land out west really rear its ugly head in a bad way this year. Listeners might have noticed there was a big standoff in Oregon where a militia took over a federal building in protest of regulations that were preventing private companies from using federal land. And it's easy for people who live in D.C. and people who are east of the Mississippi River not to realize that so much land out west is owned by the federal government, entire chunks of land that equal the equivalent of an entire state. And a lot of the people who live in those states are just really kind of compressed into small areas where the population is, but then the rest is owned by the government. And whereas the land, you know, the 13 colonies in the original United States, not much of that land is owned by the federal government. So, Barron, this issue clearly relates to other areas of the economy, not just siting, but what does this bill do to kind of mitigate the problem where private companies cannot build on federal land?
Well, let me back up one big step here and just emphasize, just so everyone understands it. If you want to think about the quality of your wireless service, the inputs are, it's basically how much spectrum is there times how many towers are there? Because that basically is what gets you the quality of service. If you have less spectrum, you probably need more towers. And then the towers, in turn, have to have connections to the internet, which is where you get a backhaul. So for each tower, you've got to have a way of connecting it to the rest of the network. The best way to do that is by laying fiber optic cable. So the point is that, especially in rural areas, low-density areas, especially out west, you need not only spectrum, but you need to build a network of towers, and you need to have fiber connections that actually wire those. And for the most part, those towers are going to be installed along highways, and you're going to need access to federal lands or to the highways, which actually are owned by the states. And so that's why out west, this bill is really, really important for connecting both rural people out west in rural areas across America, and especially in, for example, reservations, which we've talked about on the show. So those would be the two key ingredients. The bill starts to deal with some of those problems. It focuses on access to federal lands. There's a similar bill, although it's broader in the House, that goes after those issues. And they start with how much red tape is there? What do you have to do to get permission? How long does it take? And the data is pretty clear. You could, for example, be trying to wire towers, and you might have, say, let's say 90% of the distance is along private land, but you have to cross a little bit of federal land to get there. That one little bit of federal land might tie you up for years, just dealing with the federal regulatory clearance issues. And then there are questions of how much you have to pay for it. This bill, like the House bill, attempts to streamline that process.
Yeah, one of the frustrations out west, as I mentioned with the Oregon situation, is just the fact that those people and those companies have to deal with the federal government maybe way more than companies who operate on non-federal lands. And Washington might be thousands of miles removed from them and their concerns, yet they find themselves constantly having to go through a federal bureaucracy to deal with it. So maybe this bill, at least in the area of mobile broadband, could help mitigate and prevent prevent that type of resentment, which could really boil over in a negative way, as we saw.
Yeah, I just have to just emphasize here, as a New Mexican, my family spent about 15 years dealing with the Bureau of Land Management, which surrounds the land that we own outside of Albuquerque. And the way to think about it is that the federal government is the ultimate absentee landlord. I mean, if you live next door to a property that was owned by someone who was never there, didn't take care of it, caused you all kinds of problems, you would hate that. But if you then needed, for example, if you wanted to get broadband service to your home and you needed that property owner to consent, you would be in a very similar situation to what many Americans in rural America, and especially out west, are dealing with. And that's what this bill really attempts to do by, one, focusing on federal land specifically, citing issues, how long it takes to get access. And then, two, the similar but different issue of, what do you do with the interstate highway system? Those are not federal assets, technically. They're owned by the states. They're federally funded. And the question is, not just do you get access, but if you want it, but do we have a rational way of encouraging the engineering of the roads to make it easy to deploy broadband? Do we put a conduit alongside the road or under the road so that it's easy to add fiber?
All right, so let's get into that issue specifically. We've talked about on this show that consumers are rightfully frustrated that they don't have more options. I mean, broadband deployment is going fairly well in the United States, but we can always have more competition, more networks, more pipes, more choices for consumers, because that will result in faster speeds and better services. But while a lot of people on the digital left say that government should be building networks and that's the way to have competition, a lot of people say, that's not the right way. Government shouldn't be running broadband networks, but that doesn't mean there isn't a role for government in encouraging private deployment and competition. So the Mobile Now Act, one of the amendments that was added to it is called Dig Once. It's the Broadband Deployment Act, which was introduced by Anna Eshoo a few months ago. And that really is getting at the issue of the federal government and getting into the broadband business only insofar as it encourages private entities to deploy broadband. So, Tom, what is the concept of Dig Once, and how will that help mobile broadband and freeing up more spectrum and making the product better?
Well, I think it'll help tremendously. This is not a new idea. Anna Eshoo herself introduced a version of this bill twice, I think in 2009 and again in 2011. She introduced this bill. It didn't move. And then the President Obama released executive order. I forget the name of it, but
he really, okay.
Right. One of those executive orders that actually included some dig once language in it.
And everyone else seems to have forgotten about that order too, because it didn't really change much.
Well, let's just back up a second. What is the concept of dig once?
Okay, so I mean, it's dig once as opposed to digging twice. So if you think about if you have multiple providers who are trying to lay new infrastructure, say conduits or fiber, whatever else they may be laying in the ground, switches and the like, if you had multiple providers trying to come in and lay infrastructure at one time, or conversely, if you had an incumbent provider who had infrastructure in the ground, and then you had another provider who wanted to come in and build over the top of that incumbent's network, then you would have the incumbent hiring its own contractor to first dig up the ground and make sure that its infrastructure doesn't get harmed, and then you'd have a second team of contractors coming in to lay the new infrastructure for the new companies. Or if two new companies were laying at once, they might just each have their own construction team, which is fine, but it slows things down a lot. You have two different teams doing duplicative work. It's basically inefficient.
It's worse than that. I mean, it may mean the difference between someone deploying another network or not. So in other words, dig once really may radically change the economics of deployment and allow for new networks to deploy inside cities. You could have new last mile networks. Google Fiber, for example, would very much be helped by dig once. But also, if you look at, for example, a company like T-Mobile has been trying to build out a tower network to deploy 4G service to the rest of America. Sprint is in a similar situation. Those are the two smaller of the four nationwide carriers, and they end up having to rely in significant part on their rivals, companies like AT&T and Verizon, to serve their towers, or maybe on cable companies. The point is that dig once would make it easier and cheaper significantly for them to build their own fiber connections to their own towers so they can expand their own 4G offerings and you can have more competition in the wireless market, as well as easier connections for home broadband, wireline home broadband in rural areas that currently lack a strong wired connection to the internet and actually might be using, there may be, if you go to many towns out west, the reason the network is so slow is not because of the cable network. It's because the cable network in the town is connected by a point-to-point microwave network between the town and the next hookup to the internet instead of a fiber network along the highway.
So the basic concept is that rather than digging up a street multiple times, every time a new provider wants to come in, they have to dig up the street, or when the government, if, you know, they decide to create their own network, which is probably not a great idea, but if they do decide to do it, they're going to have to dig up the street. Just dig once. Dig up the street, the federal land, put in conduits that any private provider could lease, which would encourage competition and decrease the cost of deployment. And that is now a part of the Mobile Now Act, and we'll be tracking it to see if this bill comes to law. But this bill, while it has, we've talked about a lot of the advantages and how it's going to help mobile broadband deployment and help free up spectrum and help pave the way for 5G, it doesn't have everything. This is a step in the right direction, but not necessarily as big a step as people might say it is. So let's get into the things that are not in this bill. Tom, what are some things that still need to be done? You know, assuming the Mobile Now Act gets President Obama's signature, what else needs to be done to really push mobile broadband deployment into the future?
Sure. As you say, this is a step in the right direction, so we applaud the work, but there's always more that can be done. The bill was only marked up today and passed out of committee, and some good additions got added during the markup, including, well, initially there was only a small provision on dig once that basically said it was the policy of the United States to encourage that sort of thing, but didn't actually include any requirements. Senator Klobuchar added an amendment to the bill, basically making it the same as what SU has proposed on the House side. So the dig once bill the dig once provision is now in this bill, but even that we think could go further. As Barron was saying, it only covers fairly funded highway projects, which would be great for funding, you know, the internet core infrastructure and middle mile, but not so much for the last mile networks. So inside cities, the Dig Once Conduit Act won't actually do that much to promote last mile broadband deployment.
And let's get into the issue of climbing, Barron. We've heard the concept of dig once, where you only dig up a highway once, put the conduit in, and then you don't have to deal with that level of construction again. What is climb once, and how is that something that this bill is not including but could be included in a later bill to really add to the step in the right direction that we've talked about?
Well, also called One Touch Make Ready. And the idea is that there are areas in the country where you would dig to install fiber. But in most areas, far and away, the cheaper option is going to be using existing poles that run alongside highways or even streets and cities. Using those, you attach your new network onto those. So that's what a pole attachment is. And the point is that those carry electric wires, they carry telephone wires. And if you're going to use those, let's say you're Google Fiber or some other company that's trying to deploy, you need to make those, you or someone else needs to make those towers ready for you to use. And so this has often been called One Touch Make Ready, the idea that you could have a contractor that goes up, rearranges everything quickly in a way that doesn't disrupt service for anybody, and that does allow you to add your own network on there. So it's an inherently difficult problem because we are talking about private property in some sense. The poles are, in most cases, owned by a private telephone company, private power company, whatever. But importantly, they're building it on government land, and they're probably the only private company that can get the right to do that because, in many cases, the right-of-way alongside highways is very narrow. So you couldn't have two sets of poles. And so that's why we have federal regulation that requires that the rates that are charged for using those private poles that are built on public land be just and reasonable. That's about the only form of rate regulation that libertarians like us would really be comfortable with. And the question is, how do you implement it well, both in terms of the rates that are charged and getting access so that you can climb once? You can just have, if you're deploying, you send up a single contractor up there, to rearrange the attachments and deal with that. Now, this bill doesn't really deal with that issue. This is currently a live subject of litigation in Louisville, where Louisville passed legislation to do that. And it's not clear that that's really legal, and so AT&T is fighting in court. The short answer is either states need to pass bills that deal with that, or the federal government needs to preempt. But it is a delicate balance, because you do want to make sure that it's done responsibly and you don't end up disconnecting power or other forms of service.
Yeah, there's always the delicate issue of federalism when dealing with the internet, because the internet is inherently an interstate entity. And while it's important that we simplify deployment, there's obviously some serious concerns about states' rights when the federal government preempts state regulations, however misguided those regulations might be.
And in a way, that's really the way to understand this bill. This bill almost entirely stops short of preempting state regulation, right? Congress has been very, very hesitant to start mucking around in state and local regulation. The pole attachment provision from the 96 Act does preempt, but it then lets states reverse preempt, so that states can pass their own laws, as, for example, Kentucky and many other states have done. But I think we're now at a point where we're starting to see that these problems are really inherent in how local governments deal with deployment. We've seen that with Google Fiber fighting to do last mile deployment. But it's also true for wireless service. And I think it was really quite telling that yesterday at the Senate Commerce Oversight hearing, you heard Mike O'Reilly, one of the Republicans on the FCC, who every single time I've ever heard him asked about a role for legislation and should Congress do something, he has always said, look, it's not my job to tell Congress what to do. Congress tells us what to do. And yesterday, he in a really important way, seemed to break with that and seemed to say, look, we actually really need to have federal preemption here. We need to start dealing with some of these issues through federal law. And so, in other words, I think once this bill is passed, the next step is going to be seeing preemption of state laws on these issues to make deployment easier at every step of the way.
Well, so to wrap up, let's talk about the prospects of this bill. You just said once this bill is passed, so it seems like you're fairly confident. Tom, do you have any sense of the timeline here, what to expect, when we could expect to see it being voted on by the House and Senate and signed by the president?
I'm generally bullish about the prospects of this bill as well. There's a companion bill on the House side that has a lot of overlap with the Mobile Now Act, so I think there's a lot of bipartisan support for both of these bills, and that they could pass and be signed into law within the next couple months. Of course, we're in an election year, and here in D.C., that means not much happens after, say, July or August.
Right.
So if it's going to happen, it has to happen soon, and sooner the better, because obviously a lot of these issues are long-term infrastructure issues, so we need to be working to promote broadband right now. We can't wait until we see how the election is going to affect things and how things shake down here in Washington after another round of musical chairs. I think these bills are good ideas. Obviously, we think they could do more to promote broadband deployment at the last mile. But overall, they're all good ideas, and I think they should be passed post-haste.
Well, listeners, we'll certainly be looking out for this bill to pass in the next couple of months. And as we mentioned, there's a lot of things that this bill doesn't do. So we'll be looking for bills that address those issues, and we'll certainly be discussing them on the podcast. And while this bill is saying that it's paving the way for 5G, it's important to note that, you know, when the one number increases from 3G to 4G to 5G, that small number represents big, big increases in potential speeds. It's not just slight improvements. 3G, you know, you have max speeds of 5 to 12 megabits. 4G, you have max speeds of 50 megabits. And then for 5G, which Verizon recently tested, you've got max speeds of almost 4 gigabits. So this increases exponentially, and don't let just the single number increase from 4G to 5G confuse you. These speeds are going to be as fast as your home connection now, or even way faster. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Tom Struble, Policy Counsel at Tech Freedom. Thank you for joining me, Tom.
Sure. Happy to be here.
And as always, Baron Soka butted in on our podcast and made it a three-person podcast. Thank you for joining, Baron.
But added plenty of carefully scripted humor, right?
Ah, of course. This was hilarious.
Well, Evan writes all my jokes, so if it's not funny, you should blame him.
Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.